First off, being that I've been gone for three Sundays, the first week I was in Belize and just want to say that it was wonderful and refreshing and spiritually invigorating to be at our place down in Belize with the Gotts family down there and just hang out with God for a week and pray and read and take walks and just truly enjoy Him and just get reinvigorated there. It was absolutely great. My second day there, of course, is when everything happened in Haiti, and so tried right away, just figuring out. I heard only military was getting in, and so was working with the Belizean Defense Force, because John Gotts is their head chaplain, and working, trying to set up a team to get in with them. And right before I came home, Kevin Byther gave me a call and said, hey, we want you on this next team. We got a medical team coming in. I think it'd be great for you to be there for the pastors. And so that just worked out very fast. So by the time I came home, I was gone in 4 days, so I didn't get to see you the next couple Sundays. Hopefully you liked my little video, though. Did you like that? Yeah, I'm going to become YouTube famous or something with it, I'm sure. But anyways, being able to go to Haiti, I just considered myself privileged and humbled and amazed that it all worked out to be able to go. Been going to Haiti with the Bythers since 1996, and so I think this was my 16th trip going in. And, you know, anytime you travel, there's plenty to be enamored by, different countries, different people, eating different foods and different cultures, and all those are neat things. But the number of years that we've been working there, they become friends and dear friends, many of them. And I'm humbled to say that 17 of these pastors and their leadership of the many conferences that I've done over there, they consider me their pastor. And it's, like I say, very, very humbling. But when this was all taking place, that's really who I was thinking of, because there's the responsibility that is going to be hanging on these men, with people coming with questions and with hurts and trying to help out and figure out the situation. And so that was really my heart for being there. And so as Kevin took in Team 1, I had 11 on Team 2 kind of coming in after that. Part of my job was logistics, being in the number of times, being able to help in getting the second team in. Navigating crazy airports, transportation with the phone calls with the UN and coordinating all of that to get our 4.5-hour trip from Cap-Haitien to Hinch, where the property is, and customs and just everything else. One of the things that I got to do is spend some time just sitting down with Pastor Eliabert and seeing how he was doing. His brother, Tellius, has one of our churches in Boac, and he lost his son. Was there at school in Port-au-Prince at the time, and so talking with him. And Kevin and myself got to sit down. You know, we were trying to strategize. Okay, we have HEF has this money coming in. We have this money coming in. What do we do with it? What's going to most honor God, and how's the best thing? And Kevin and I were talking before our meeting, because Pastor Eliabert put together a kind of an emergency response board together. And so we set up a meeting to be able to talk with them. And I said, let's just hear what they have to say. They live here. They know the needs. They know what's going on. And so we basically said, what do you guys have in mind? And they pull out a 3-page outline of exactly what they wanted to do. And it was absolutely beautiful. And, you know, Kevin and I were talking, you know, being there for so long and doing this, you don't realize progress. And we're hearing from so many different people, you guys really have this all set up and coordinated. And so I just so appreciate Harold and Natalie and Kevin and Cindy and Glenn and the whole Byther family and just the coordination that's been there. Because now, so that's one of the hardest things, is just simply to hand out things. You hear of all of this food and money and everything else going in, but what do you do with it when you get there? We've learned the hard way a number of times. You open up the back of a truck or start handing out stuff, and you have 400 to 500 people immediately, and a mob scene and almost rioting going on, and it's actually very dangerous. And so with that, having 17 pastors on the upper plateau, completely spread out, whatever we give, we can give to them, and they can distribute. They know where the needs are. They know who needs them, and they can work on the whole distribution, and this whole thing's already in place. And so we'll be able to get the money to them. They'll be able to buy the rice and beans and everything else and be able to get out to the people that need it, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. Also was helping to With both CCOF, which is Calvary Chapel Outreach Fellowship, with Roger Wing out of Costa Mesa, coordinating the handful of Calvaries that are in Haiti and doing something, so keeping kind of them abreast of what's going on, because there's a lot of Calvaries wanting to know what can we do. And also with Tom with Calvary Magazine and kind of keeping them updated, and got to fire a few photos off to him. It's a strange trip. Kevin's getting calls from the Pentagon. They don't have any intel of what's going on in the plateau. And so here are phone calls coming into Kevin with the Pentagon, and we got the special ops guys showing up with no names, no insignias. You couldn't even tell that they're from, well, we could tell they're from U.S., but just nothing on them, and you can call me Jack. That's all they would say, and don't take my picture, you know. And so these guys are up there and interviewing everybody and taking our pictures. We can't take your picture, you know, those kind of things. And they just kind of came and go and would show up at the right times, and so that was fun. And I also, before I get in my message, want to say thank you to all the churches, a lot of our Calvary friends that have entrusted us and HEF with finances. Again, a lot of us as Calvaries, we have missionaries in different places, and so when catastrophes hit, we try to help each other out. And so I wanted to say thank you to Gary Galbraith over at Revival, Gary Johnson over at Hemet, Jerry Brown with U-Turn. He also has Calvary Chapel of Romaland, Calvary Chapel of Claremont, that's Pastor Marco Alvarez, and Calvary Christian Fellowship. Every one of them have sent finances our way that we could distribute. Also, Ranch Community Church put on a concert for HEF, and just it's just so cool to see the different churches coming together and helping out at that time. Larry and Dan quickly got up with Ken and Natalie on the website, got the button on there to be able to collect donations. We had 50 people do that at 4,500, something we had never done before. We're able to do that, and with everything put together so far, it's a little over $22,000 that you guys have given and different churches have given to help out the need. And so just wanted to say thank you for your generosity and your gifts in that, and it's amazing what we'll be able to do, all of us kind of pulling it all together. Will you guys turn with me to John chapter 19, and I'm just going to share just a couple of verses, and then I'm going to show you a bunch of pictures of kind of what we did and other ways in which Lord might lay upon your heart to be involved. But I was looking at John 19 and where we would normally pick up at this point and see if there was any connections, and two of them just really stood out. And so I just thought I would share those with you and kind of springboard off of it. In verse 25 of John 19, it says this. Here is Jesus on the cross. That's the scene. But at the foot of the cross is a handful of people. Now others stood by the cross of Jesus, his mother, his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and, Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved, that would be John, standing by, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." And he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, that disciple took her to his own home. Remember that phrase, took her to his own home. Verse 28, after this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the scripture might be fulfilled, said, "I thirst." That'll be our second phrase, "I thirst." Now a vessel full of sour wine was sitting there, and they filled a sponge with sour wine and put it on hyssop and put it to his mouth. And when Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, "It is finished." And bowing his head, he gave up his spirit. The first part, when that phrase kind of stood out, and the disciple took her to his home, that was one of the first thing that we had mentioned, or that I had seen in Hinch, is everybody that we talked to brought somebody into their home. Hinch grew to about three times its size, and all the way down to Illybert and Marie, and asking how things going. Well, we have a family living in our house. So just about everybody opened up their home. Now understand, most people can't even afford to eat themselves. And you don't stock up food. You go to the market each day, and you get your cup of rice, or maybe two cups of rice if you're wealthy, and to be able to prepare your food for that day. And so that's kind of the norm. And so in the midst of abject poverty, bringing in a whole nother family constitutes a whole nother set of problems and issues. And yet to see the hospitality of Hinch was incredible. And I wondered, right here in the Murrieta Temecula Valley, if every single one of us would open our home if there was a catastrophe, not even thinking about it, just inviting right people in, not wondering, would we be able to feed them, and will some people have to sleep on the floor, and, you know, and be able to do that, but immediately welcoming everyone in. The second part, when Jesus said, "I thirst," it reminded me, and now I'm going to go to Matthew 25, And this is what I'm going to kind of show pictures from. We can go ahead and put the first picture on so we can be ready for that. But in verse 35 of chapter 25, and you're familiar with it, it's when Jesus himself said, "For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty," so there's our word, "and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me, and I was sick and you visited me, and I was in prison and you came to me." And then down in verse 40, "Inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me." And I believe that still is for each and every one of us today. That truly Jesus sees as we help somebody in need and we're giving them that cool water or clean water, which we'll talk about later, handing them that water is, we might as well see Jesus on their face. They've been made in the image of God, and Jesus is the one saying it. I still believe it's the same today, that as we do these things, it's like just ministering straight to him. Some have asked the question, where is God in Haiti, or where was God in Haiti? And I love, I had shared with you, I just finished the book by Richard Stearns, which is the president of World Vision of the United States chapter, and the whole in the gospel. And he says this, "Christ is not distant from us in our times of suffering. He lies crushed under the weight of concrete walls. He lies wounded in the streets with his legs broken. He walks homeless and hungry through the camps, and he weeps uncontrollably over the child he has lost. Where is God in Haiti? He hangs bloody on the cross, a man of sorrows and familiar with our sufferings." See, any time a disaster takes place, the question is always asked, where was God? And here is always your answer. He was right there. He was with the person under the building. He was with. See, that's his promise to us. Not that we as Christians will ever not get a scratch, not get a bruise, never break a leg, or maybe not even die. That's not his promise. My promise is I will be with you always. God was right there. And you saw it also on CNN, Fox News, and everything else, and all the reports. Here in the midst of all of the tragedy is so many different so many of our Haitian friends saying, "Béni soit l'Éternel, bon Dieu béni you," praising God and giving him praise in the midst of their desire. And some of it was crying their eyes out and wailing that, but still looking to God in the midst of this disaster. And we got to meet so many of them of crying out to the Lord, even in the midst of their troubles. First of all, with Haiti, and I know you've probably seen a ton of maps and everything else, but anytime we talk about a country, not everybody's been there. So basically off the coast of Miami is what we would know it closest to, next to Cuba. And there's Belize I put over here in this little triangle, is straight across from where Haiti is. But of course, Haiti's sharing the island with the Dominican and the island split in half with this mountain range that tries to separate the two. Next map is where we landed. We normally go into Port-au-Prince, which down in this area here, but came into the north into Cap-Haïtien, and we're able to get some private planes from Fort Lauderdale to be able to get in, eventually able to get in there. And then a 4.5 hour bumpiest ride I've ever been on down to Hinch with UN escort. This was our team, mostly doctors and nurses, a plumber, electrician, to be able to beef up some of the things on the HEF's property there. And so that was our team. And so what I'm going to do is just simply walk down these six phrases here where it says, "I was hungry." Dave Pedersen drove for 8 hours. It was 4 hours to the border of the Dominican. So we were able to get 20,000 pounds of rice and beans and some oil and some other necessities to be able to be brought to the compound. That, of course, you needed UN guards to be able to do that, but we're able to do that without incident. But again, it is treacherous roads, and it's 4 hours up, turn around, 4 hours back. And so we appreciate Dave taking that long ride. And, of course, his wife, Shelley, and all of her logistics back here helping. Out. This is them coming back with the goods, a couple pictures of the UN and a couple of the big camions that were full of the rice and the beans to bring that back. And all the UN guys were great. Some from Chile and Uruguay and even Jordan. I said, "Hey, I'm going to be there next month." And great guys. Fun talking with them. The second one was, "I was thirsty and you gave me to drink." You see that picture there? You know, as you're going through different websites and there's always on the far, you know, there's banners or advertisements. This was just an advertisement off the right-hand side, but I can never get it out of my head. And it was like water.org or something. But this picture of this dirty water in a baby's bottle. Now, no mother in her right mind would you know, hand her baby something like that. But on the other hand, every single day, it is dirty water. Most of it is boiled, but not every time. And so it doesn't look that dirty. It might not look it to the eyes, but it definitely is. There is so much stuff. And so, you know, just a couple quotes on this. Of the more than 6 billion people, we're almost getting close to 7 billion people in our world, over 1 billion have no access to improved drinking water. That's almost 1 in 7 people on our planet don't even have fresh water. So that's been really on my heart of, you know, what can we do with that? The next quote, see if I have, according to the UN's Children's Agency, UNICEF, you've heard of, polluted water and lack of basic sanitation claim the lives of 1.5 million children every year, mostly from, again, water-borne diseases. It's so amazing that, you know, in reading that book, The Hole in the Gospel, they did this whole thing on malaria. They say of all people that have ever died, almost half the population of the world have died because of malaria. I would have never guessed that, never would have thought of that, but you have different groups going into Africa and different places that are trying to treat one little thing, and you might look at that and think, yeah, but that's not bringing the gospel. It is amazing what takes place just with fresh water, just with helping out with malaria, just with helping out with AIDS or finding one area. And really, as I'm going through all of this, it'd be my goal to be able to say, what's your passion? What's one thing that's going to grab your heart that you're going to say, I can do something about that? And I'll give you some examples before before we're done. Here's a few ways. You know, as we have been looking at different ways of helping out. And so one of the ways, we're giving some of our finances to Haiti Endowment, to Samaritan's Purse, because we worked with them in Katrina and different places, but also Sawyer Water. They're doing a one-for-one match right now, and we're going to wait and buy in bulk, because if you go to their website, it's pricey for some things. This takes care of 40 gallons a day that you can run through this filtration system. And there's so many neat things. One of the guys, Tyler Combs, was with us, and he works for Sovereign Earth. And that's Dr. Combs' nephew. And so he gave each of us as team members one of these, and it's just got this little cartridge on the bottom. You can literally pour. These guys were filling this up anywhere we went with whatever type of water, and it filters out all the different things. So just to be able to, you know, somebody can do a campaign, buy a ton of these, and these are a little pricey right here, but it's another way of doing it, to be able to hand those out. Now they even have straws that have filters. They literally can go up to a river and stick the straw in there, and it's a filtration with straws, and those are like $10. And so there's so many different ways. You can drill a well in Haiti for, I'm guessing, $2,000, $2,500 in actually drilling a well, which literally a whole village will walk to be able to do that. It's not a whole lot, and yet again, 1 in every 7 people on our planet just not being able to have cold water. And again, as Jesus is writing this, I don't think he was just being poetic when he says, "I was thirsty and you gave me drink." I don't think he's saying, "Now what can I say after hunger?" No, I don't think that's what he's saying at all. I think he's looking at 1 billion people on earth that have one of the necessities is food and water, and one of the drives that he's made with humanity to be able to drink water is simple as that. And we just think how much water we waste and everything else. So it's like, no, I think we can do something about that. Here was the little water bottles, and the next one. "I was a stranger and you took me in." As I said, a hinge swole to at least 3 times the size. And again, everybody we talked to was bringing somebody in. And I looked at Romans 12, verse 10 through 13, and it reminded me of them. "Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor giving preference to one another, not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfast in prayer." Listen to the last two. "Distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality." And boy, did we see that just all over the place. All the believers reaching out and helping out. It was beautiful. Our next one, I was naked and you clothed me. Now, granted, I was going to show a bunch of pictures of naked babies, but just know that there's a whole bunch of naked babies always coming in, and Cindy's running around and grabbing. We always have clothes on hand to be able to help. And sometimes not little babies, little older kids, but there's always little naked bodies running around that we're helping out with clothes. But I want to tell you about one sweet story, and it's about these two girls right here. Brooke Snyder is our principal for our high school. And she was telling her mother what our church was doing in regards to Haiti. She goes back to her retirement community and gets all of her girlfriends together and says, we need to do something about this. Everybody put in something. So they collected $220. So I had this envelope of $220, and I took it there, and I thought, I want to do something cool with this. And so I sat down with Illy Bear and Marie, and Marie says, I know what we can do with it. She said, what they're doing in Port-au-Prince, what our government has done, since all the schools are down in Port-au-Prince, they're asking all the private schools to take 20 to 30 kids, and that way we'll be able to just kind of disseminate them all over our little country. So Marie says, we went ahead and took 30. We just have no idea how we're going to pay for it. And what that money would do, the $220 would cover 2 to 3 kids, because... You might not know this, but you have to have a uniform if you go to school in Haiti. It's just kind of their tradition, but it pays for a uniform, pays for the shoes, pays for all of their books, and pays for their tuition for a year. And again, this is 2 to 3. She says, I'll have 2 of the kids show up on Sunday, let you take a picture of them. So these were 2 of the kids that came up from Port-au-Prince, that the little tiny retirement community that says, hey, we can do something. We can help out somebody. They're helping these two kids. So I'm getting a picture made and sent to them. And I just thought it was a little, I love when somebody says, I can do something. And it really does touch and touch lives. I was sick and you visited me. Now, this was kind of the main reason of going in. And so we're going to touch on Hinch Hospital, St. Teresa, and also the HEF clinic and Los Palis, a little village that we went out to. We went out to another clinic at our church in Ravencal, but I wasn't on that one, so I didn't take photos, but that was another clinic that we did. And as you see on the bottom, in 1 week's time period with these doctors and nurses, we calculated at the minimum of 2,000 people that they were able to be able to see. So these guys worked tirelessly into the nights, and just great medical community that we were able to come from Idaho and Southern California here. And so we'll start with the Hinch Hospital and just a few stories of some of the people that we met that touched our lives. First, in just getting in, we had an orthopedic surgeon and a trauma surgeon and an anesthesiologist that came with us, kind of top guys in their field from Southern California here. And the gal on the right had, I understand, as we had learned, when something crushed them from the waist up, you would just die. Too many vital organs. But anything from the waist down was usually a double leg break, double femur break, double tibia break, or ankles, or smashed arm. And that's what we saw, bed after bed after bed after bed, especially of the children. I mean, you hold up, I don't know how to read x-rays, but boy, you hold these up. And I remember Dr. Combs, we did kind of the walkthrough with him on the first night and did his rounds. And he says, Brian, look at this. And he holds it up to the light. And there's a man's back. His whole back was broken and off to the side. He says, they're not going to be able to do anything for him. And just going bed to bed and just seeing the atrocities that of the whole earthquake was very difficult. You know, while the doctors and nurses were doing those things, Dave, and I'll show you a picture of Dave and Warren, they'd come up with dressing up like doctors and bringing in balloons, and so we did animal balloons and other things. But I love this verse, as it says, and our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. Then they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. And that's what they came, you know, they were actually there to, Dave works with wood, Warren is an electrician by trade. They had a number of things on the compound that they needed to fix. Solar panels were coming in, a number of different things. And they went to the hospital the first day and just fell in love with these kids. And they went back day after day. 4 hours became 6 hours, became 8 hours. And these guys were almost in tears at the end. Just as they're going to touch lives, their lives were definitely touched. And so going in and doing, well, let me show you a couple pictures. There's Davey with Krista, and her mom had died some years earlier, but lives with her dad and stepmom in Port-au-Prince, and she had a double break. And as you can see at the very base down here, what a lot of them, they weren't going to do surgery on. They basically have this traction, this weight hanging off the bed, hopefully to pull the bone to where all of a sudden it'll align straight and hopefully grow back together is kind of the thought. And so most of these kids having to sit there 6-8 weeks and sitting in one place 6-8 weeks, and we just saw just how torturous that is, just sitting there. By the way, that was Dr. Mango, we can call Dave Halley now. That's his new name. And then we had with Warren became Dr. Fu. Fu means fool. And so we'd go through and everything from balloon animals to they ran out of balloons. And so he's an electrician. So we had a thing of number 12, THHN, bunch of wire. And so he's making glasses and hats and all these sorts of things. It was absolutely hilarious. And the kids, these guys would walk in the room and all the kids would just lighten up and bubbles and everything else. Is really a lot of fun. And they're signing cast, Dr. Mango, Dr. Phil. You saw that everywhere. It was like graffiti almost all over the hospital. What was funniest was the real doctors always trying to figure out who these guys were. What kind of doctors you guys again? So they finally put on their thing, funologist. So they would stop asking. Scott Holman also goes to our fellowship. He is a physical therapist, and you see him in the back right walking with the guy with the walker. That photo gets to be in Calvary Magazine, so one of the ones that made it in the magazine there. So Scott was there. He's been on a number of trips. There's some of the wire glasses that they're making. Great little smile. Little friend that I had met there. This little Joseph, he touched our lives. One of the first nights there, Cindy had saw, you know, there's people just packed in the hallways and saw this baby on the brink of death. And again, this was at least a week out from the earthquake and had come up the 4.5-hour drive from Port-au-Prince to there in the worst bumpy road. And so there he is laying there and just lethargic. And Cindy got a couple of the doctors to be able to say, you got to see this kid. He had a broken femur. And so the doctors were able to get him on and help out little Joseph. And everybody signed his cast there and see him smiling on the left. And here we have John Gorman, which is there to do plumbing. We had to change out a number of things. And John's getting calls like, hey, we need a drill at the hospital for the surgery. Dust one off and get it down here. He'd get calls that, hey, we need a bar. There's a bar that's going across his two legs to be able to keep it stable. We need it this long, this size, get it down here. So he's cutting and just amazing how God used everybody to pull these things off. I don't know if you can see it on the left here, but there's this, we found this one man just lying on the Word of God there, and just meant such the symbolism that was there, that was just touching to be able to see that. Also, we went out to two of the villages. This is one of them, to Los Feliz. And our truck ride on the way there, those waiting in the waiting room. And this is Dr. Les from our fellowship. Les and I got to go to Burma together back in November, so it was neat traveling with Les again. And again, these guys would see just so many patients and just work and as late as they could. And this is another picture that made Calvary Magazine there. There's a gal on the right that came from Port-au-Prince, stitches ripped open on her arm that he was getting cleaned up. This is Lorena, and goes our fellowship also, and is an RN. Where's Lorena? I just saw you a minute ago. You are an RN, right? Okay, good. I just want to make sure. I put it on there that I think that's what she is. I knew it was LVN, RN, one of them. And so thanks, Lorena. It's fun getting to know Lorena. And she was just great with the kids and stop what she's doing, teach them how to jump rope, go back to what she was doing and helping so many different patients. This was my favorite one of her there because she gets a shot in and I guess there's a sweet spot right there, the cortisone shot to the arm. And as it's going in, I'm taking photos and it just smooths right in. So she lights up and just says, it went right in, it was a perfect shot. And so she's all lit up and then you see the grimace on her face over there. So such the contrast, it was so great. So that was just fun as a photographer, that was just beautiful. There's some sweet faces, so many little babies. They're just beautiful. That's Tyler Combs on the left and Rose, one of the nurses that came with us on the right. Also, this is the clinic right there on the Biders compound there, the clinics that's there. And so each day, And a lot of times, even as we'd go out to the villages, we'd have, one time we had this whole group of Catholics that came, of doctors and nurses, who couldn't be used at the Hinch Hospital, and said, hey, we hear you have a clinic, can we help? And so they would just come right in, we'd feed them, and just had just a neat time with them, and so they'd come and help out. So this is indoors, working inside the different the clinic that's right there in the compound. For the other one, I put, I was in prison and you came to me. Well, it wasn't exactly prison, but I was just picturing these poor kids having to sit there for the 6 or 8 weeks. And so in that sense, maybe a prison for them. One of the things you can pray for Haiti, when the prison went down in Port-au-Prince, about 5,000 prisoners went free. And in that, they'd killed a few of the guards, took all the guns, took all the ammos, and are still at large. And destroyed all the records, and so there's no photos of them, no names or anything else, and they're having to round them up one by one, and they have about 20 so far. And so what they've really put a lot of work in with the UN, working with the Haitian police and army to get these bad guys put away for the last 5 years, gang leaders and everything else, and so really be praying on that the Lord would just give them favor and being able to round these guys, round them up again. Surely I say to you, inasmuch as you did it one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me. That's a great reminder for each and every one of us. You don't have to go to Haiti to do this. This happens in our daily life as we reach out in the name of Jesus to different individuals and reaching out and helping them in just such practical ways. It sounds like God says, he's blessed. It's like you're doing it to me and I'm not going to forget. Here's just the last few random shots, and then I'm going to wrap up with some action items. That's Pastor Eliaber and Marie, and then Cindy and Kevin Byther, and some ugly guy in the end. That was after church on last Sunday. Cooks, this is a very important ministry as far as teams going in. A lot of times people say, well, I can't preach and I'm not in the medical profession. What can I do? There is room for everybody to do something. Now, it's going to be difficult in the very beginning. We're still just sending medical teams in, but cooks are very important, and these guys are two great cooks, Kim and Cindy right there, and so we appreciate them. Is Dave doing some welding? There's Pastor Eliaber and then his wife Marie with Cindy. And a picture in the Haitian market. One of our young nurses that were there. One of our little geckos. And this is what I did at night. People were saying, so why did you go, Brian? And so, you know, there's other things that I do on the side that you don't know about and can't share all of them, but... Nah, it's a sweet MP5, yeah, double clips with a 9mm, yeah, it's pretty cool. And this little guy, he was at the Hinch Church there, cute little guy. Action items. Here's a few things. I stole this from Richard Stern's blog site. Number one, educate yourself. Then decide what issues you're passionate about. Allow your heart and soul to be touched by God to help in some way. Secondly, find out what your gifts are. What are you gifted in? What gifts has God specifically given to you? Find a charity and support it. One of the ways you can support it is volunteering your time. I look at Harold and Natalie that probably work every single day on Haiti business. And here they are. I won't give your age. I'll just say they're in their 80s, okay? And here they are working every single day, pouring hours into that. Maybe volunteering with them. Maybe volunteering with EEO. There's a number of different ministries we have right here in our valley in which we could we can help them out. Another way is involve your community. Whose lives do you touch? Who are you around? Where are you helping coaching a certain thing, but bring your people into it? I love what Dr. Combs shared with me on the first night. He says, Brian, over the years, we've both been here a number of times. It's so neat, all the different individuals that God has brought here and how God uses everyone. He says, I think back, if it wasn't for Lisa Gomez, a nurse that goes to our fellowship here, a lot of you know, well, Dominic that just shared, it's his mom, and she kept bugging Walt to go, and she was the one who talked Walt into, you gotta come, and would come back and tell her stories, you gotta come, and Walt was the one telling me this. It was because Lisa invited me, and because I've invited others, and now we have a ton of doctors from Loma Linda, and dentists, and people from New York, and Hawaii, and Idaho, and all over the place that go and help out HEF with all of their different medical clinics. It's neat, and it's just a friend telling a friend, and so involve your community. So the things that we can do when a disaster hits, talking in local newspapers, radios, TV about what's going on. Sometimes there's sending a message to our representatives in Congress. Is there something more we can do as a nation? Engage your social networks. I mean, that is where so many people are connected to what we call communities today, whether it be their blogs or MySpace or Facebook or My Book or My Face or whatever else. And all the different ones, there's so many people that are able to raise awareness and even raise funds. That's their little communities. And just to be able to put a little blurb out here, hey, here's what I'm doing, or here's what this group's doing, or my church is doing, and it's just amazing. I mean, that's a great way to be able to take these communities and put them together and put them to good use. Get your children involved. There's books that you can read to educate them on helping out and what's going on in, for instance, Haiti, as we've been talking about. One thing that Kelly and I did when our kids were really little, as we said, we're going to take our kids with us whenever we can on missions trips. It's going to be extra money, it's going to be that, but we wanted them both being raised up and understanding who missionaries are, how important they are, what it's like living in the other parts of the world, and both of them still very involved with missions today, and I believe will continue to be. Lastly, be creative. God has given each and every one of us those unique gifts, special people that we know, or whatever else, we can all do something about it. And so it was Wayne Dollarhide that went to Haiti and was so touched by these kids in school don't have any food, and so the Lord put it, upon his heart to start Five Loaves Ministry, which feeds kids in Haiti, but also in the Philippines, a few different places in the Philippines, and started that ministry. That was from a trip, came back and said, I need to do something about it. Jacques Lecure, he's our former pro soccer player. He wrote his book, Making Your Life Count. I heard from Jacques this week. He's the best dressed guy in the church. Jacques, you here right now? Where's Jacques? Stand up, Jacques. Come on. This is guy the best dressed guy in church or what? Right on, bro. Woo! That's awesome. But he's got a credible heart for God, played on the pro team, the soccer's down in San Diego, called them up and said, I'm going to give the proceeds of all my book sales in 2010 to HEF. And I went to their website last night, Jacques, and sure enough, on there, our former player, Jacques, and it mentions him, and we're going to raise funds. So on February 26th, their proceeds from their tickets are going to go to HEF and just all the different connectors. There's one guy sitting there saying, what can I do? Now, he was born and raised in Port-au-Prince, and that's what his story's about and talking about, and you get kind of the culture of what was happening there. And so, but he's saying, well, I can do this, and I can do this. I can make a phone call. I know these people over there. And it's just, that's it. That's exactly it, is simply be creative. Check this out. I don't know if it's last Sunday or the Sunday before, our fifth and sixth graders on Sunday morning talk with their teachers, and they came up with, what can we do? Let's do a bake sale. Made $1,000 in one Sunday on a bake sale. I was like, that's awesome. Those kids getting together saying, let's do something about it. Okay, that's all. But bottom line is, when somebody's thirsty, somebody's hungry, somebody needs some clothes, somebody needs help in meeting their mortgage payments or whatever it is, in any way that we can be able to reach out, Jesus himself says, you did it unto me. I'm not going to forget. Let's pray.